This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
Michael Potter from the Centre for Independent Studies is studying Treasurer Scott Morrison's ideas for affordable housing. I know that's a very broad matter. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm great.
A pleasure. So tell us, what is your brief? What are you? How are you looking at this, and what are the main points that you think are going to be important in this issue?
Well, obviously, housing affordability is something which is on front of mind for a lot of people. It's a major issue. We've got some very strong increases in housing prices, mainly in Sydney and Melbourne. And people who are not in the housing market are seeing it becoming harder and harder to get in. What's called the deposit gap. This is the most important problem. The number of years you have to save to get a deposit is growing really very quickly in Sydney and a bit slower in Melbourne. And I should point out that it's not an Australia-wide problem. We're actually seeing house prices going down in Perth after they were at quite high levels. So
the Treasurer went to the UK and had a bit of a look around, and the UK is a different housing market to us. The public housing or the publicly owned housing is much larger, and a lot of that has been sold over the years. Negative gearing is something that always comes up in this, and I listened with interest. John Alexander, the member for Bennelong, last night said on Radio National, we've got to look at how we deal with negative gearing, that this is helping to sustain the bubble. Is that you're going to be looking at negative gearing and the impact it has on affordability?
Oh yes, it'd definitely be something I'll be looking at in the future. There are a number of points there. First of all, the Reserve Bank has actually recently, a couple of years ago, looked at the biggest drivers of housing affordability, and they came to the conclusion there were really two big things. One is finance. And so that's, interest rates, how easy it is to get into the finance. And the other thing is the difference between demand and supply. So that's how many people are wanting houses and how many houses are actually available. Those are the two biggest drivers. And importantly, they didn't actually say that the tax, and particularly negative gearing, is going to have a major impact. So there's a lot of rhetoric running around about this. I'm not convinced at all that negative gearing itself is a major effect.
What about the number of houses that are or dwellings that are acquired that are left empty because they're purchased by investors? I mean, we've had some pressure on the way in which that's had an effect on the market as far as overseas buyers are concerned, with policy changes at a state level. But again, we're seeing significant numbers of amounts of housing stock in those really high demand areas that aren't in fact being used.
Yeah, that's an important point. I've actually had a quick look at the data about vacancies. There aren't actually a huge amount of properties that are vacant. It's a bit hard to say precisely on that one because, it's a bit hard to define what that actually means. If somebody's away on holiday, does that mean the property is vacant? All of those types of problems. We don't have the most recent data. The most recent data is from the census, last year's census. You remember the census?
Yeah.
Had certain problems with it.
I think some people are still filling out their census documents out there, aren't they?
Yeah, look, we'll have the latest data on the vacant houses in later this year, I think. It doesn't appear to be a giant problem. Of course, people are anecdotal, but it's better to look at what actually the numbers say, and they say that there isn't a huge amount of properties left vacant.
Michael, I recently read a report around about Docklands that showed that about 20% of the housing stock there had not been utilised, and the measure that they used to assess that was water consumption. So no water consumption at all in 20% of those properties.
Yeah, I've seen that data. I'm somewhat more sceptical about it. I prefer the data from the Bureau of Statistics. I think I always prefer their data. And I mean, you might think that maybe the ABS would actually include everywhere, because it's a census. It includes absolutely every house.
Well, of course, the difference is that one's immediate and the other one's actually a longer-term range. Mm. So you're not getting data through ABS, of course.
But I think
the
issue, Michael, of whether it's land banking or property banking by investors, and I understand the land banking, the property banking, where unless you're paid for it outright, and even then, you've got to have an awful lot of money to be able to afford to do that. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but the issue around negative gearing... with a Liberal MP saying, we need to look at this, and we know that the government's, really is all over the shop on this, and the opposition has a particular policy, the Greens have another. Do you think, you said that, you weren't convinced it was such a huge factor. Let's assume that it is a significant factor. What change do you think needs to be made? From my point of view, I think it's basically... The ability to negative gear is unhindered. So you can actually negative gear more than 100% of your income. Surely that isn't something that encourages a sensible market.
Well, yeah, I can understand that perspective. I'm just not convinced that something needs to be done on it. Fact is that the investors, I don't think, are driving the large part of the market. They might be driving certain portions of the market, but I think that'll be the very high end, the couple of million dollar places and plus. And so rental affordability for most people, I don't think is actually going to... housing affordability overall is not going to be dramatically affected. Another way of looking at this, the negative gearing actually doesn't really change very much the number of houses out there, and it doesn't change the number of people that have to be in houses.
Doesn't it attract people to invest, though, in a particular type of housing stock? So, for example, people in the inner and middle suburbs, and also in the outer suburban ring as well. That's an attractive proposition for a negative gearer, on the basis that there will be depreciation there that can be capitalised on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. That's absolutely a fair point. But I'm just saying I'm not convinced that that's going to be making a big impact on the market. It's undoubted that it does have an impact. It's just whether it's a big impact or not.
Well, particularly for those people looking to break into the housing market, if you're a young family and you're looking for a backyard and you're looking for some space and access to schools and to the things that are really important to that age group, then again, you're looking at housing stock that's typically older and that's typically ripe for being snapped up on a negative gearing opportunity.
It's very clear to me that our kids will not be able to afford to buy property. I mean, we've got two kids, a 26-year-old and a 22-year-old, have been saving like mad now for years. But, Michael, my question is really about what can we expect to see from the federal government. We hear on the grapevine, in fact, not on the grapevine, we hear it reported through the mainstream press, that housing affordability is going to be central to ScoMo's next budget. Can you shed some light on what we can expect to see? Two questions. What can we expect to see, and what should we expect to see?
And how many inheritances will be required in order to actually fund a better capacity for the housing market for entry level?
That's a good point, that last one. I think there are a lot of people who are actually an increasing number of people are relying on family finance. It's not a huge number, but it's increasing quite quickly. People are actually relying on other members of the family to get into the market.
But particularly, you've also got a situation, though, where often if parents can't afford outright to simply hand over an amount of money of their savings, people are often putting their mortgage, their own homes up as collateral. And what that then means is that if something goes wrong with the purchase of that second property for whatever reason, and that then puts two families and two homes in a very vulnerable position.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, I go back to something I mentioned earlier, which is one of the key drivers is population. If the supply of houses is not keeping up with the population growth, then of course prices are going to go up. So you need to look at it in combination, the population which is driving the biggest driver of demand, and the number of houses that are being built. It's the distinction between those two. And the research from the Reserve Bank indicates that that's actually the biggest thing that's causing the most recent price increases.
Right.
So, and of course, the government actually does have levers it can pull in terms of population. I mean, if they really wanted to, they could be reducing the amount of immigration.
2.1% population growth in Victoria is not showing any signs of slowing down at any point.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a particularly good idea to be shutting down immigration. And of course, if you were a certain type of politician, you could talk about saying we should make it harder for people to move around within Australia. I don't think that's a particularly good idea.
I'm not that sort of politician, just to put that on the record.
I don't think any of us have. Look, sorry, we've run out of time, Michael. When will you be presenting your findings? What sort of time frame are you working on?
I'm actually going to be doing several sets of bits of work. My first one will be on what's going to be in the budget. Oh, and I just might mention the big thing which is probably going to be there is about trying to improve the ability for affordable housing providers to borrow money. That's probably what's going to be the big one, which they're going to do. And they'll probably do a lot of other things. But I'll be doing some work just before budget, and I'll be doing some more one after.
Great. Well, look, we'll stay in touch because it's a really important issue, and everyone has a view. Not everyone's going to agree, but we need to have the discussion. I thank you so much for your time, Michael. It's great.
Thank you.
The Centre for Independent Studies, we get a lot of good feedback when we have you guys on. Thank you very much, and we look forward to reading your reports as they come out.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.